Hello and welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as almost always, the Ollie to my Stan and the Chewy to my Han, it's Dan.
Oh, am I supposed to say something here? What's this? What are we doing? This is. Am I on the air? Hello?
We're so horribly out of practice. It's horrible. Before I say anything, people, don't give me shit for mispronouncing Han Solo's name. I know it's Han. Fuck y'all. But I wanted to rhyme for Stan and Dan, so that's that. Anyway, good Lord. I think it's been over a month since we've even released a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. I think we did one like early August, maybe. Is that about?
Yeah, I have no idea.
And even those podcasts that we released, I think the last one might have been my drunken commentary on Gotham or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Everything that we released in August was actually recorded in mid to late July. So it's been that long since we've both gotten behind the microphone. So we've been taking the summer vacation thing seriously, I guess.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm sure people don't mind the break from mediocre podcast to listen to.
Nice. I have been getting some the occasional listener here and there. I talk up our podcast with some new coworkers, and they're like, "Wow, you have a TV podcast!" I'm like, "Trust me, it's not as cool as it sounds. It doesn't take much."
A few days ago at work, one of my coworkers, a high school girl, she got rid of her phone, stopped working, so she got a new phone, and she got an iPhone, which, you know, I think going from an Android phone to an iPhone is just like the dumbest thing ever because they're crap. So I hassled her about it for like hours before I realized, hey, I can leave us a 5-star review using her iTunes account. So I made her log in and leave us a review. So
I was wondering, I saw a review.
Yeah.
The username seemed to be, I was like, okay, this is obviously someone having a go here. I believe it had something to do with you and your posterior and the scent involved, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, chicks a third to a half of my age tend to think I have a good-looking posterior. You know, I hike a lot, so it doesn't really do anything for me. But, you know, if we get 5-star reviews, I mean, hey, I'll do it. We get to 50 reviews, and I'll PM you guys any kind of picture you want. I don't fucking care.
I actually thought you just said, "I'll pee on you guys." I was like, what? What?
Oh, that's 60 reviews. So.
All right, I'll be 60. And, you know, confession time, we actually did sort of kind of plan to do, I put in air quotes, a special podcast that I think really probably would appeal more to you and me than it would most of any of our listeners.
I don't know. I think a lot, you know, some of our, you know, a lot of our friends who listen to the show would dig that, because just the shows that we talk about are one.
Possibly, it's possible. I do feel that those two shows. Let me explain. We had both decided to watch the first season of one of each other's favorite TV series that we had never seen ourselves,
and we didn't really pre-plan it either. We just kind of like ended up doing it somehow, and then
oh yeah, it was totally like an impulsive thing. Because and the funny thing was, because you're so busy not just with your work and life in general, but also, you know, you're an outdoors when you like to take advantage, especially of this weather, to go out and do your hiking and your kayaking, whatever the heck else you do, whatever, you're everywhere. So you don't have as much time to sit and watch a TV show the way, you know, New Yorker on his couch like me does. So therefore it was okay that the first season of the show you had to watch was somewhat shorter than the first season of the show that I had to watch. Should I just say what the shows are instead of being all secret about it? It doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
You had to watch the first season of Oz, which I and people like Alan Sepinwall as well credit as the show that started the big golden age of dramatic television on cable and everywhere else. And I had to watch the first season of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which I believe is your favorite Trek series overall.
Oh, yeah.
And so Oz, you know, 8 episodes, although they're fully sized episodes. Those episodes tend to be, you know, they're on the verge of an hour each, just about sometimes.
Yeah, they're pretty long.
Deep Space Nine, their first season was 19 episodes, which doesn't sound so bad when you realize all the other seasons were about 26.
Yep.
So fast forward to right this moment, So we've never gotten around to recording that podcast. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. I even have the art done for the podcast image already, which has been done like a month ago.
Yeah, we almost did for the first season, and then just we both ended up with, you know, life shit to deal with, and it just didn't work out. And then we ended up. I mean, I guess you kept watching Deep Space Nine and got kind of far, and then I had started watching. I just high spotted some episodes in season one to. So I'd like, you know, be a little bit fresh for the podcast, and now I've watched 54 episodes, so, and I haven't watched any more Oz, so I probably should get back on that.
Yeah, because Oz gets so much better after the first season. I mean, yeah. The first season's okay, but it's exponentially so much better in the second season, especially when Christopher Maloney joins the cast and all these other characters. It just gets that much better,
which works out good too, because Deep Space Nine is pretty similar, where, you know, it starts out fine and just gets better and better, and then just, like, you know, boom.
I'll just to be clear, so everyone knows what I'm up to with Deep Space Nine, I think the last episode I watched was either episode 19 or 20 of season 3. So
20. Ooh, you're getting at some good shit there.
I have gotten, how many is that? 60, it's 61, 62, 63, something like that episodes. Kind of crazy because I've had a lot going on in my life, which is one of the reasons we haven't been able to podcast. And I was also juggling going back and forth between watching Deep Space Nine and also the second season of Narcos premiered recently. And I love the first season so much, I needed to watch the second season. But Narcos can be pretty heavy stuff. I mean, so I genuinely did go back and forth. I'd watch Narcos, Deep Space Nine. Narcos, Deep Space Nine. It was such a nice change of pace just to go back and forth. So I didn't feel that, like, oh, after watching Narcos. But those were the podcasts that we thought about doing, but we haven't gotten around to doing. But the podcast we're here tonight for is something that we've sort of planned to do for about a year. So. And for a change, we're actually sticking to a plan, unlike a certain other podcast, which, oh, by the way, almost 2 years will have passed since we've ever gotten back to the Essential TV podcast. Still got the script for it. We'll do it eventually, 2018. So what I'm talking about, and as anyone who's already listened to this podcast already knows, probably from the title or the picture or whatever, it is mid-September, so we're continuing a tradition that we started last year, where, basically, after combing through lists of different TV series and actors and actresses, and, you know, they're all over the internet and so on and so forth, of people and shows that were unfairly snubbed or overlooked by the Emmys. Now, although I can obviously think of several in the comedy categories who got left out, you know, I Feel Your Pain, Rachel Bloom, totally unfair. We are, when it comes down to it, we are the Serious TV Drama Podcast, so we are going to simply focus on those top five dramatic television categories. Also, unlike some of our podcasts in the past, we don't want to be a three-hour podcast. But as you know, if you're going to hand out these awards, you're going to need judges to pick the winners. So probably before we get started, right off the bat, we should just acknowledge who our judges were this year. And we actually had a few additional judges this year that we didn't have last year. So, hey, Dan, if you want to acknowledge them, because it'll be more special if you say them, and I'll handle the rest.
Fuck, I don't know who they are. Bunch of dumb shits. Who cares?
Come now, there are podcasting buddies, our all-star squad, if you will, or as I say every week for most of the year.
Oh, yeah, well, there's Cade. I mean, for now, he's just been on our podcast, but he's actually in pre-production of his own Frasier rewatch podcast, so that's a project he's got in the pipeline right now. So we figured we could escalate him up to the, a real podcaster rank.
This running gag of this Frasier podcast has been the bane of my existence. Such an awful idea.
Well, if he didn't come up with such an awesome name for it, I probably would have let it go. But
it is a good name. anyway, let's speed through it. So we got Cade. So that's number one. Cade leads off. Who else?
Vicky. Who else?
All right, Vicky and Jason. Yes, the folks that we usually do our. By the way, that podcast that we do with them when we cover, you know, which is now essentially going to be, I think for the most part, it's going to be like the CW superhero podcast. Since all the shows we talk about, generally speaking, are on the CW, except for the occasional Netflixer. One of these days, I might have to come up with an actual different title for that podcast to really separate it from the other things that we do. But
we might want to solicit some donations from the listeners, maybe of like methamphetamine and cocaine and stuff, just because we're going to be like up till middle of the night talking about like 50 fucking shows that are on every week now. So it might help us with our day-to-day jobs and, you know, podcasting energy levels. So if you want to maybe, you know, send us some crystal and shit, would be nice.
It might. I also think we're also going to be able to cut down a bit on some of how we talk about some of the stuff as well, which we've done a couple times. It's happened.
Yeah,
it's actually happened.
It's within our possibilities.
It's, you know, we just got to be more vigilant about this. Anyway, totally derailing the podcast once again. My fault. Back to the Blue Ribbon panel. Yeah, they're Blue Ribbon. We'll give them Blue Ribbons. So after we brought our own three peeps into the mix, but beyond that, we have Susan Monk and Kelly Eckert from the Geek Girl Soup podcast participated in the voting this year.
They're awesome. They were the first podcast I ever was on, so it's cool. They're great people.
Yeah, I'll let you say the nice things about all the other people on their podcast, since they never say anything nice about me or our podcast, so I don't really care.
They're cool chicks. That's the best thing I can say about them.
Now, Susan, she also happens to co-host the Z-Cast, which is for the one zombie show that's on cable that doesn't take itself too seriously, Z Nation. And one of Susan's co-hosts on that podcast is Brad Ziprick, who was another member of our panel, kind of co-representing the Sci-Fi Rewind podcast, which they haven't recorded in a while, by the way, along with his podcasting partner, who actually joined me here early this year in a pretty awesome two-part Good Wife podcast. So that would be Courtney Robinson. We love Court here. And speaking of people who have guest appeared on our podcast, possibly our best substitute host when you were away a couple times during the second season of Better Call Saul, we got Mike Moody, who we know chiefly from the TBI podcast, but he's also the host of the Mr. Robot O podcast. And he started this huge new enterprise with all these podcasts that confession I was supposed to be part of, but don't know if that's going to happen. And finally, we do have two other podcasters who I'm going to say are probably the least likely to ever listen to this or any of our podcasts, quite frankly. That would be Colleen and Jack Glatfelder from the Jay and Jack Podcasting Empire. I guarantee that your bestie Colleen has not only never listened to any of our podcasts, including the one that she, Jack, and her husband, Jay, essentially took over back in January. She seems to forget half the time we even have a podcast.
Yeah, she's very busy, and you know, she's a really good friend, very beautiful, but she's kind of a space cadet when push comes to shove. So if she's listening to this, what she's not.
She won't.
No, but
it's just they won't have.
But at least they were cool enough to show up on our 100th podcast. So them and Colleen's husband, her adequate husband, Jay, and who we would have asked to do this, but he's been really, really busy doing his upgrading the technology in the Raleigh Triangle area. So he's doing some good work, too. He's a good guy. His hair is kind of lame, but.
All right. Well.
And Jack sucks.
Yeah. Anyway. Everybody I know in the world is busy, so there you go. So there you have it, along with Dan and myself, of course. Those are the 12 judges who voted this year. So it's almost like we've actually assembled a jury since we got 12 people. So that's kind of cool, I think. Oh,
yes. Who's juror number 8?
Henry Fonda? No, wait. Wait, was that his number? I don't know. Was he number 8?
I think he's number 8.
Let's hope he was, but if he wasn't, I don't care. All right, you know, we know why we're here, and now we know who voted. So I'm thinking it's time to strike up the band once more.
Here's to those who love not wisely, no, not wisely, but too well. To the girl who sighs with envy when she hears that wedding bell. To the guy who'd throw a party if he knew someone to call. Here's to the losers. Bless them all.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. We're all happy to be such losers here on the second annual Snubbies Awards. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
Well, I think I'm doing a little bit better than your choice of tie seems to be indicating, but no, just kidding, you look fine.
Well, I would definitely say that you are looking particularly fetching tonight, Dan.
Fetching like, here, boy, go get it, good boy.
That was basically the joke, so thanks for stepping on the joke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Paging Bruce Valanche. Isn't award show banter the most banal and witless bullshit ever?
No, I've read. No, never mind. We'll save the CJ jokes for later. So,
right, you know, jokes for just one member of the audience. Eh. Anyway, before I go any further, especially now that you mentioned CJ, it's about time to pour a drink. So just give me a second here. Hold on. Doing a classic Jameson and ginger kind of thing here. So hopefully I won't get all Ricky Gervais-ish and get drunk halfway through the award show, but it might happen.
I hope that it does, actually. It's always entertaining.
So, again, we are here once again for the Snubby Awards, the awards that recognize those that the Emmys chose to fuck over. So
sometimes it's just like the category is just too stacked, you know, like, and there just isn't room for that. But a lot of times they just get fucked over.
I want to agree with that. But God damn it, every category that these people were left out of, there's at least one or two that are in the Emmys that are like, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's always that issue. But as we go through these categories, and we'll be flipping back and forth, and we'll be telling you people out there who the top five finishers were in each of the top these five categories. I will tell you right now that each category had at least 15 candidates. Each voter could vote between those 15 candidates, or if they chose to, they could nominate someone themselves, as at least one of our jury members did. Of course, if not enough people bother to pay attention, those are votes that might as well be going to Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, but kind of wasted here. Anyway, while we're going through those categories, I may also take the time to give a quick prediction as to what will win the Emmy as well. Just so we can kill two award shows with one stone, essentially, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
All right, so let me take a sip of this to see if the drink actually is going to work. Oh, wow. Mm.
Pretty tight there.
Oh, it's it needs an ice cube, but other than that, it's really good. So, I think by the time we get to the lead categories, it's going to be interesting. Anyway, so let's start the show off with the Best Supporting Actress in a Drama category. So we are going to be giving you the top five nominees. We've not decided who should go first, so Dan, do you want to start off and we'll just ping-pong back and forth here?
Yeah, and for some of these, you know, I'll just, yeah.
We may choose to comment. We may not. It depends on our familiarity with the nominee or if we actually have something we feel like saying. So.
Yeah, so feel free to say what you want here because I'm sure you'll have a lot more to say about a lot of these categories than I will, but I'll try to make up for it by, I don't know, not being so nasally and congested. So,
not possible.
So, as seemed to happen a surprising amount of times last year, we actually starting out with a tie for the number five slot in the Best Supporting Actress in a Drama, and we've got Christine Bransky as Diane Lockhart in The Good Wife, and Helen McCrory as Aunt Polly in Peaky Blinders. Scott, take it away, because I know nothing about any of this.
I was thrilled to see both these actresses be able to make the top five. I like the fact that they tied. Christine Baranski has done great work on The Good Wife for years. it might not have been her best season per se, but she certainly had a great moment at the in the season finale that will always be remembered. And I've always liked the actress Helen McCrory on Peaky Blinders. She did do some really solid work this season as well, so well deserved for both.
Nice.
The number four slot was taken by Ann Dowd, who played Patty Levin in The Leftovers.
Yeah, she definitely had a strong performance this season. I mean, it was a strong season for, you know, a lot of the characters, actors on that show, but definitely one of the better ones.
I thought she stood out far more this season than the previous season in a much more bizarre part for her.
Yeah. So
I really enjoyed, especially one particular episode. What was the assassin? I forget the
complete International name. Assassin.
International Assassin episode. She does exceptional work in that episode. Exceptional.
Yeah. all over the place. Just, you know, great range and, you know, able to make, you know, you can go from hating her one second to being like really sympathetic the next second and then hating her again the next second. So, I mean, for an actor to have the ability to do that, of course, they need a good script, but they really have to be able to act the fuck out of it. So she definitely has that skill.
Absolutely.
All right. Number three is Carly Chaykin as Darlene Alderson and Mr. Robot.
I'm so excited she finished in the top five. Even though this is based on season one, she's been such a star of season two, it made me want to go back and watch her a little bit in season one and just remembering how good she was. So really glad that she finished here.
Oh, yeah, she's rock solid. I've been catching up on Mr. Robot after, you know, I've just kind of been watching it a little bit here over the season, and I'm almost caught up now, and yeah, she's just been, you know, just terrific. Really, really caring, you know, caring scenes that, you know, just good stuff.
Just love her because it's like all these characters, or most of them at least, she's just different. It's not someone it's not the type of character or performance you're used to seeing on TV, so that's why I really like her. And let's get to number two, because I think we both have a little bit to say about this actress. Rhea Seehorn as Kim Wexler in Better Call Saul. I mean, come on. I mean, we adore her, do we not?
Yeah, we do her. You know, we liked her a lot in season one, but season two, I mean, I'd say that she had as much of a role as Odenkirk did this season. I mean, you know, she's definitely still a supporting actress, but, you know, I consider a lead just because the way the story went this season, and just rock solid, awesome performance. Well, you know, across the board.
Well, they utilized her character more.
Yeah.
So she had to step up more. In a way, you can almost, it's kind of like when you would look at Breaking Bad and how Skyler is more clearly more of a supporting character on the sidelines early on, but she takes a much bigger part as the series goes on. So I think that's kind of a similar thing that Gilligan has done here.
Yeah, and just the best shows that do that, where they naturally have the characters, like, you know, evolve based on the needs of the story instead of just, like, you know, jamming them in for some reason.
Right, absolutely.
I guess that's ready for our grand champion.
We are up to number one, so I believe this is where you pop in a drum roll.
Yes. And we have our number one best supporting actress snubby in a drama is Regina King, who played Erica Murphy in season two of The Leftovers. Scott?
I love Regina King. If you ever get around to watching the show Southland, she's fantastic on that. She's just one of those actresses when you know you're going to get a good performance from her no matter what the production is. You see her name in the credits, like, oh, okay, there you go. And I thought she, for me personally, other than maybe one other performer, she was the standout performer on The Leftovers this past season. And there is one episode in particular that the power of that scene and what she does in it is probably one of the best acted scenes I've seen in television in the last few years. So she was my number one choice as well. She clearly, for me, deserved it. I was very happy. If Rhea Seehorn would have won, I would have been happy with that too. But I thought Regina King really deserved it.
Yeah, she put a. I think I preferred Seahorn a little bit more, but I could, you know, it could go either way. So I'm happy with it. Definitely, you know, really, really strong work, and just the kind of thing where, you know, when you watch a character like that, where just, you know, just you don't know what to expect. I mean, other than a good performance, but it's just, you know, it's just, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, and it can be surprising. You know, we're used to seeing things play out a certain way, so when these shows manage to surprise us and just do really crazy, sometimes really twisted shit, it's, you know, it's always nice to see it performed with such talent and skill.
Yeah, I was just so happy for her that she got such a really great part that, what it could have just been simply, you know, a wife and mother and all that entails. And I don't mean to belittle that, of course, but because of this season of The Leftovers and all the mystery involved and the uniqueness to this storyline, which was so much better than season one, quite frankly, it gave her so much more to work with. And you wouldn't know what to expect from her character or that part, which makes it that much more exciting to watch because you don't know what to expect. And it's what made the season as exceptional as well.
Oh, yes.
All right. You know, it's funny when you're giving the winner there, I realized, hey, we never came up with like an official like way to say, and the snubby goes to, or something, which is probably what we should do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've got four more categories to have a nice inconsistent way of doing it.
An inconsistent uniformity, which makes no sense. All right, so let's move on to the next category, which will be the best supporting. Oh, let me shut up for a second. Rewind what I just said. We're not going to go to that category yet. Let me quickly give you my prediction for the Emmys, because I forgot about that.
Well, how is that shutting up for a second?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Drinking is affecting me already. I see, because I'm drinking this really fast.
Sweet.
Okay, just to get out of the way, the Emmys, the Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, the nominees were Maggie Smith for Downton Abbey, Constance Zimmer for Unreal, Alita Headley for Game of Thrones, Maisie Williams for Game of Thrones, Emilia Clarke for Game of Thrones, and Maura Tierney for The Affair. All these Game of Thrones actresses here, the only one who I could see making a really good case for of these three would actually be Lena Headey. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing her last name. Don't care. I don't think Emilia Clarke was anything special out of her interacting with the little guy. And
Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage, thank you. And I didn't think Maisie Williams was as impressive this season as I think she was in her earlier seasons. I like Maisie Williams better in her first couple years than I have in her last few years, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, they didn't give her much to work with this season, sadly. So.
You know what? But it's prediction time. It's the last season of Downton Abbey. Who knows how much longer we'll even have Maggie Smith with us. I'm just going to say they're probably going to give it to Maggie Smith, but the Lena from Game of Thrones might end up winning, might upset it. I don't think Tierney or Zimmer really have a strong shot here. So yeah, That'd be my prediction.
Have you seen The Affair yet?
I've only seen the first episode. I've not gotten around to watching it. I really should. I know it's supposed to be really good.
Yeah,
I heard the second season is really good too. So that's kind of promising, knowing that it's got two good seasons. Yeah, so. But I might get around to that sometime before the fall is over. I think I still have Showtime for free for the rest of the year or some bullshit like that.
That's sweet.
Okay, so sorry about that. So best supporting actor in a drama. I guess I lead off this time.
Yes, sir.
Too much talking. Okay, so much like the supporting actress category, we again begin with a tie. The first person to tie for the number five slot was Kevin Carroll as John Murphy from The Leftovers. And he tied with Christian Slater as the actual Mr. Robot in Mr. Robot.
These are two performances that I was, I didn't really know going in what to expect. I mean, I've liked Slater, you know, okay in a few things. He's, you know, not one of my favorites, but he usually gets a job done in, you know, whatever shit I've seen him in, Interview with the Vampire, you know, never really a standout. But He definitely turned it up a notch for this show. I haven't seen, and then Kevin Carroll, I haven't seen him in anything before, but damn, I mean, you know, the dude can act, and just the actors that he's playing against, and just like the crazy performances he had to pull off. I mean, they're both just, you know, it was good stuff. I mean, they're, you know.
I thought Kevin Carroll was fantastic on The Leftovers. At one point, I thought he was kind of like the MVP on the show, because he was kind of like really, he was the unexpected for me. Because I also hadn't really heard of him before, you know, so I was more familiar with people like a Regina King or the people who were in the previous season of Leftovers. And Slater, I'm on record as having been someone who kind of has hated Christian Slater for most of my life. The fact that I really like him now and on this show speaks volumes for his performance on the show.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, now we will move to number four in this, do you remember the last year where Best Supporting Actor in a Drama wasn't just, like, the most stacked, difficult category, like, ever? Because it's been a while.
This category. I mean, all these categories got some power players in it, but this one, yeah, it's a tough one.
I'm just looking ahead. I'm not going to go through it, but all the six people that were that finished in the top rankings of this category, I would have been fine with pretty much any of them winning this category. So that really, you know, speaks to just like the wide range of just awesome freaking performances we've had to choose from here, and these are the guys that got screwed over. So
yeah,
supporting actors, you're doing a good job. So, number four, Michael McKean, Chuck McGill, and Better Call Saul.
I can't believe you didn't get nominated for the Emmy.
I'm still
shocked about that.
It's, that's why I, you know, probably won't watch the Emmys, because after my outrage last year, and I barely tolerate these things in the first place, it's just, you know, it's like being the fan of a sport team or something, you know, you're going to lose 80 times a year. It's just like, you know, fuck, why be frustrated all the time? And that's how it is. And since I'm more into TVs than sports, because, you know, I'm a Twins fan, so I may as well just, you know, like TV more instead, or just safer that way.
Come on, Brian Dozier, man, come on.
Oh, yeah, he's good. I'm sure he'll enjoy watching the playoffs, in his apartment or something. But, yeah, Michael McKean,
We've talked about him enough on our Better Call Saul podcast. He's fantastic on it, and the fact that this is an actor who, by and large, has been known as a comic actor his whole career, kind of like Odenkirk, actually. And he did such amazing work, and I love the fact that there are so many people who don't like him or hate him, but it's not nothing with his performance. They just, you know, they just root against him. But by the end of that season, you realize, you know. Not so sure we should be rooting against him. I'm not sure. I'm can't wait for season three of Better Call Saul.
We got to see him do a lot of interesting stuff this year and show. We've seen him play a whole bunch of different kinds of characters in this season. But I get the strong sense that they're gonna escalate his role a bit in season three, and we should be able to see some just amazing shit. So,
right,
it's gonna be sweet.
All right, so. We go now to the number three slot for supporting actor in a drama. And I'll get a name I'll probably mispronounce. Oh, I'm going to say his name is Ian.
I think it's Ian.
Is it Ian?
I think it's just Ian with a weird pronunciation.
Oh, on the W sound. Okay. Hopefully that is the case. Ian, is it Rion?
Rion? Yeah.
The guy who played Ramsay Bolton on Game of Thrones. Now, what's interesting about this is, when I was putting together the list of all the possible nominees, and I thought, okay, there's probably some people who got overlooked in Game of Thrones. And, you know, there's other people I could have put on that list that, you know, but I wanted to keep it to 15, you know, so it could have been like the guy who plays Jaime Lannister, or this one or that one, you know. I very strongly considered putting Jonathan, why am I forgetting everybody's name right now? The guy who plays the High Sparrow. I even considered putting him on the list.
Oh, Jonathan Pryce.
Jonathan Pryce, thank you. Brazil, should remember that. But all of a sudden I thought of Ramsay, and it's like, oh my God, he has to be on the list. Because there's just something about, I mean, because he's the most evil fuck of all, you gotta have a place for that guy. So you can't deny the power of his performance, and he's certainly a memorable character and a memorable performance as well. So I'm fine with the fact he made the top five. I'll confess, I am glad he didn't win, but yeah. I do believe he did deserve to finish as high as he did, though.
Yeah, he's definitely a stronger actor, and I mean, unlike some of these other actors, his performance didn't really, you know, he didn't really have to show a lot of range. Sometimes right. when he's, like, manipulating characters, you know, we'd see him do stuff a little bit differently, but he definitely just has that, like, you know, physical presence of just, like, a nasty, nasty, nasty person the entire time, and it just, you know, just oozes out of him. So, and, you know, and that's definitely something. Just consistently, he's just been good, so it's nice. He's a, yeah, good shit.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the biggest love to hate characters in TV over the past year. Sure.
All right, moving up to our number two best supporting actor is Tom Cavanaugh as Harry Wells in the Flash season two.
I was actually surprised he finished as high as he did, although I was very excited about it. But that just kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I was
pleasantly surprised. You know.
Yeah. He definitely, you know, we've talked about him all down the street for the whole last couple of years.
We've probably spent more time talking about Tom Cavanaugh than most other actors. So, great work. How he can keep taking a part or a similar part, since it is technically a different part, and keep finding different ways to do it. Kind of, he's just so fun to watch, and you know, there are certain sides to him where, you know. Do you hate him? Do you love him? Do you trust him? Is he a hero? Is he not? You know, very good stuff in a season that was very uneven, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, just to see, you know, the actor, how the way he plays this role, because I mean, he's playing a character we've seen before, but a different version of it. So just like the kind of mental preparation he has to do must be really interesting, and just the way he does it. I mean, it's never really over the top or anything. It's just subtle, but I mean, you can just looking at him standing there, you know what version of the character you're seeing just looking at him. I mean, he just becomes that character, and it's just something to see. I mean, we're used to seeing actors play, you know, the same, you know, multiple versions of the same character. If it's like, you know, Shatner being some like insane transporter duplicate or whatever. I mean, we've seen people play this kind of thing in, you know, completely different ways, but the way that Cavanaugh does it, I mean, it doesn't get a lot of appreciation, I would think, but we definitely are showing a little bit of it now for him. So good job, Mr. Cavanaugh.
Yeah, we should make sure we have the clapping there. Also, to build on something you said there, it's interesting because there are subtleties to his performance, and there is even understatement at times, and that's not something you see very often on a show which is about superheroes.
No,
you don't usually see that kind of thing. They tend performances, especially when they're either villainous or you don't know if you're supposed to trust them or not, tend to be a bit more over the top, almost soap opera esque, and he tends to not do that. He tends to go in the opposite direction. So great work. I mean, he was phenomenal in season one, but he got a much tougher assignment, I think, in season two, and I think he handled it just as well, and definitely was a different character entirely. Which leaves us number one. And the snubby goes to David Tennant as Kilgrave in Jessica Jones.
Well, I believe this is probably my number one choice. This is such a hard category for me to pick of, and I shuffled stuff around a little bit, but I just thought this performance was, you know, it was just, you know, I've never seen him in anything before, and I was very impressed. Just, you know, kind of like Rian, where it's just the kind of thing where, you know, just such a bastard, you know, sometimes different manipulative ways, but just the power of the performance is really strong, and definitely the strongest performance on a show that had, you know, a few really strong performances.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic. I have seen David Tennant in other things. I've seen him in Broadchurch, which he's really strong in, and it's a very an incredibly different part. And of course, probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with him because he was one of the people who played Doctor Who. I think he's one of the more famous people who played Doctor Who, actually. I've never seen Doctor Who, so I can't comment on that. I thought his work as Kilgrave was probably the best Marvel villain in any Marvel production other than Loki in either TV shows or movies. It was it left that strong an impression. And unlike, say, the Ramsay Bolton character from Game of Thrones, there was a few moments on Jessica Jones where you saw some pathos with this character, where you saw some sadness, where you actually understood, even if it was just for a moment, but you got why, some parts of why he is the way he is. I mean, it doesn't explain things he does, of course. We're not trying to explain that away. But you know what I mean? It gave us other sides to him. So he wasn't just purely evil. He was like 97% evil.
Well, yeah.
See that on the 3%.
Yeah, it's always nice. The villains, you know, the best villains are always multifaceted instead of just like, you know, big, you know, tall cardboard cutouts. So, you know, if it's Benjamin Linus or Loki or whoever, I mean, we get to see him doing stuff and, you know, they feel like real people doing stuff. And I think maybe they even feel more villainous because you can kind of like start to identify with them and you're just like, oh, I don't want to freaking do that. Oh, well, I'm not. Yeah. No, screw you guy.
You don't want to be the guy identifying by Killgrave. Although that's a good topic to bring up, like on a first date. It's like, oh, what fictional character do you most identify with? Killgrave on Jessica Jones. Have you seen that? Check, please.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty excellent pick there. Before we move on, let me quickly get the Emmy thing out of the way here. For the Emmys, the Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series, the nominees were Michael Kelly for House of Cards, Peter Dinklage for Game of Thrones, Jonathan Banks for Better Call Saul, Ben Mendelsohn for Bloodline, John Voight for Ray Donovan, and Kit Harington for Game of Thrones. I oddly find this one easier this year, Emmy-wise, than I have in most years. I can cut through it really quickly. John Voight's just a ham, so I'll never think he should win, so forget him. Ben Mendelsohn was great season one, but kind of pointless in season two, so forget him. Kit Harington's okay, but really, best actor or supporting actor? No. Give me a break. So forget him. Michael Kelly on House of Cards does do some good work, although I think his work was more impressive the previous season, which was a shitty season of House of Cards, but he was really good in it. This past season, it was okay. I don't know. I'm iffy on Michael Kelly here, although I would not be shocked if he won. Dinklage, everyone loves Peter Dinklage, as do I. Do I think he did anything significant in this season of Game of Thrones that merits an Emmy? No. I'm actually going to use who I think would be our favorite anyway and go with Jonathan Banks here. I think it's kind of also a make good award because he should have won at least one of those years for Breaking Bad. And maybe he really should have won last year for, you know, just for that 5-0 episode. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
He again does some great work this season. I'm sure I can guarantee what episode he sent in. That should be the award winner for him. I'm going to say it's Jonathan Banks. If he's going to get upset, I'm going to say it's not going to be Dinklage. Michael Kelly might be the one to upset him, but I'm going to say it's Jonathan Banks.
Yeah, well, it better be, even though, I mean, I don't know if I've ever been as angry watching an award show as that. So, as I'm sure there's, you know, podcast evidence of me, you know, losing my mind about it. I'm trying not to swear right now about me referring to the angriest I've ever been, but yeah.
So let us move on to the next category, which is Best Lead Actress in a Drama.
All right, is it my turn to start the ball off again?
Yes, sir.
All right, we got Rose McIver as Olivia Moore in iZombie, so take it away, Scott. I still haven't gotten around to watching it.
I love iZombie. I adore Rose McIver. I'm glad she managed to just barely make the five here. She's just a lot of fun to watch, and it harkens back to a lot of fun shows like Veronica Mars and even a little bit of Buffy, but it's not that good. But she's great, and so it's a really fun show to watch. I mean, come on, she's a zombie, and her name is Liv Moore. There you go. So then we have another. I think every category has at least one tie in it. So instead of number five, now it's number four. And you really couldn't get two more different performances, characters, or actresses than the people who tied for number four here. first you have Sarah Lancashire, who played Catherine Kaywood on Happy Valley, which is my one of my personal favorite shows, by the way, as we all know. And she tied with, and I always mispronounce her last name, so get Melissa, ready for it.
Okay, Melissa Benoist.
Thank you. As Kara Danvers, a.k.a. Supergirl, on Supergirl. I will tell you right now, kind of was a little bit surprised to see that Supergirl showed up in the top five here. I do adore her, so I don't mind it, but I was a little bit surprised at that.
Well, you know, for me, she got one of my votes, and not just because I haven't watched a lot of shows, because, you know, it's me and that's what I do. But I only watched three episodes of Supergirl, you know, the first two and then, you know, the crossover one. And right. I you know, just that was enough for me to just, like, you know, really, really like the actress. Just, you know, just really seemed to be personifying, well, both roles that she was playing really well. And, you know, I just stopped watching the show just because I didn't have enough time for everything. Yeah. But it's, you know, the kind of thing where I'd like to see what, you know, if they can give her some really good, interesting stuff to do. And, you know, hopefully they give her stuff to do. This isn't just, like, Oliver Queen-esque brooding for, like, you know, some kind of ridiculous reason breakup.
This is the anti-brooding show, pretty much. So yeah. I wouldn't worry too much. But what she's got going for more than anything else, she's got a huge likability factor.
Oh, man.
I mean, of all 20, 30, whatever number of actors on all these lists, she's probably the most likable person. She's just like, oh, you just like her.
Yeah, maybe they need to maybe have her give, like, Hillary Clinton a bone marrow transplant or something and just, like, you know, maybe some of that shit can rub off and then, you know.
And it would improve her health. No, anyway. So let's move on to the next. It's your turn.
All right. And we have Carrie. I don't know how to say her last name. Carrie Bichet.
I'm going to believe it's Bichet until we hear otherwise. So. All
right. Yeah. So if you're listening, Carrie, just, you know, call in to our non-existent voicemail line and let us know the correct pronunciation. You can even be a guest.
Or I'll give out the email address that I've never given out in all 139 podcasts that we have, but we've never used.
We should log into it sometime, and we probably have, like, you know, it'd be funny if we had emails from, like, publicists trying to, like, get on the show.
You know, I've probably used it as an email alias when I've gone on sites I shouldn't be on, so I'm a little afraid to see what might be there. Anyway, go on. I'm interrupting before you finish the...
It's cool. It's good stuff. She plays Donna on Halden Catch Fire, and, you know, she definitely was a standout of the first season of the show, which we both liked, but season two just really was able to step it up a notch. Thankfully, the showrunners gave her character enough room to really, you know, have more of the spotlight, and her ability to act definitely proved that they, you know, made good decisions letting her character, you know, evolve from just kind of a background character at the beginning somehow to just, like, being one of the, you know, the strongest part of the show. So I have not been as disappointed by her performance, you know, across the board.
Right. That is an example of someone who went from being a supporting player to, I don't see any way one cannot say she's a lead in season two. I mean, I thought the combination of her and the actress who plays Cam, that's what really you built that season on. Brilliant decision by the showrunners to say, hey, you know what? Let's focus on these two women, because in some ways they're a lot more interesting than the two guys who are like, oh yeah, you're Don Draper Light and you're Walter White wannabe. But they're very interesting. I think she's wonderful. I think there's so much going on with her, and I definitely, she's the reason that really hooked me into the show more than anything else, other than maybe the 80s music or something.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. I'm very thrilled that she ranked as high as she did in our voting here, because I meant, you know, several people had a vote for her.
Yeah, it's good. It's, you know, it's a good, it's not a show that gets a lot of ratings and a lot of talk. You know, it's definitely, you know, probably one out of 100 people watch it compared to, like, you know, AMC garbage, like the trash heap filled with vomit, cheap, crappy, generic beer that is The Walking Dead. But, you know. At least our jury of 12 well-discerning podcasters gave her some credit.
Okay, well, I'm just recording here. So about roughly 50 odd minutes into the podcast is where you went off on The Walking Dead. I knew it was going to happen at some point. I just was waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see if it ends up winning best series, then I'll really go off.
All right. So number two.
Speaking of number two.
Wah, wah, wah. Was that a sad trombone? I don't know what that was. Anyway, number two was Carrie Coon, who played Nora Durst in season two of The Leftovers. Not a surprise. I knew she'd finish high. You know what? She was the other part of that great scene with Regina King. So that, again, that scene is why I think she ranks this high. More than anything else in this
series. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think she might be ranking a little bit higher than she necessarily needs to be. You know, it almost kind of feels like we're just kind of rubber stamping her a little bit because she was so good in season one. But, you know, they just didn't really give her a lot to work with in season two. So, I mean, she was strong whenever we saw her. I guess I'm just saying, you know, I would have liked to see more. And if we saw more, she would have been completely kicking ass. So,
I think there might have been a little bit of a coattail effect here, that it was like, because The Leftovers was so popular with especially a lot of our voters, that she kind of like got swept in there. I agree. I don't know where – I think I had her on my vote, but I don't remember how high she ranked. She might have been either four or five on my list. So,
yeah.
But she wasn't number one. So, anyway.
All right. So I guess it's time for our to see who wins the snubby for best lead actress in a drama. And the snubby is going to go to Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones and Jessica Jones. And man, this one wasn't even close. That was a landslide there. So
yeah, I'm thrilled. I'm shocked that she wasn't nominated. I thought she would have been nominated for the Emmy. That was kind of a surprise. Maybe it's an anti-superhero show bias or something, but...
Yeah, douchebag Emmy voters, stupid douches.
But, I mean, although I thought the show needed some tightening and could have cut three episodes out of that and it would have been fantastic, I never had an issue with her. I thought she was fantastic on the show.
Oh yeah, she's one of our one of our Breaking Bad alums, and we were able to see her do some good work on there. But it was nice for her to have a platform where she could really showcase her talents and stuff, and play different character, just an interesting character, the kind of thing we're not used to kind of seeing. We don't really see the train wreck female detective. And she just completely pulled it off, season long. So
yeah, she did a great job being she's like dynamic as being damaged goods, essentially. Really strong performance. Really well deserved. Very happy to see her win this slot. That I don't recall, she might have been my number one choice. I'm pretty sure she wasn't. It's either her or Carrie Bechet, but I think I put her as number one, and maybe Carrie might have been my number two. Oh no, I probably had Sarah Lancashire as my number one. She was probably my number two. I don't remember. Who cares? No one really cares what I voted for. Anyway.
All right. You have an idea who do you think is gonna win the real awards done by the foolish Emmy voters?
Well, there are some interesting nominees for outstanding lead actress in a drama for the Emmys. I'll quickly zip through them. You got your Claire Danes in Homeland, and I actually did catch up on Homeland, so I actually know whether she was good or bad or whatever.
Good.
She was good. I have no problem. I've never not liked Claire Danes. Our thing about Homeland was it was just, overrated. But I don't want to get sidetracked into that right now. So next, much more importantly, Kerry Russell got nominated for The Americans. Fucking finally.
That was her first time for that?
Yep, first time The Americans got any of the nominations that it got this year.
I need to catch up on that shit.
It took it till its fourth season. That's almost unheard of. Almost. Yeah. I can think of one or two other examples, but it's very rare. Robin Wright for House of Cards. She was actually very strong this past season, so I agree with that. Taraji P. Henson for Empire. I've not seen her on Empire. I've seen the ads. I've seen her in interviews. I can imagine she's fucking fabulous on it.
Yeah, my mom watches that sometimes, and I've seen a little bit here and there, and she completely tears it up. So
yeah, she looks like she's just chewing up the scenery, but in a gloriously fun way. And that's, you know, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, these kind of performances are built on, I think. Then you have Tatiana Maslany for Orphan Black. Oh. I am thrilled that the Emmys have finally decided to nominate her the last couple of years. I wish they could have gotten her act together the first couple of seasons, which were even better. And the last one was Viola Davis for How to Get Away with Murder. I think she's the one who won last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
I love Viola Davis. I liked her in Suicide Squad. I've not watched this show. I have friends who watch it. I'm sure it's fine. As far as my pick here, okay, well, I'll quickly start eliminating people. Claire Danes, no, you won before, but you're not going to win again, so forget you. I think Tatiana Maslany, as much as I really like her, I think for a genre show, the nomination is as far as that will ever go, so I don't see her winning. I could see them giving it to Viola Davis again, but I don't know if there was as much talk about her in the second season as there was in the first. So I'm going to say no on Viola Davis. I think it comes down to Russell, Wright, and Henson, quite frankly. I don't know if Henson has the buzz about her to win the award here, though I could see it happening, but I'm thinking it's between Wright and Russell. Wright had a really strong season. But so did Kerry Russell. But it would be kind of shocking to see Kerry Russell not only finally get nominated, but also win at the same time. So as much as I personally would pick Kerry Russell as my personal pick here, I'm going to say it's going to be Robin Wright for House of Cards winning it this year. Okie doke. Okie doke.
All right. So, ready for me to take off the next to last category we have here?
Yeah, the next, what's the next category?
Oh. It was best lead actor in a drama.
All right. I guess I'm supposed to go first this time, right?
I remember awkwardly saying Jessica Jones twice, forgetting the name of the character was the name of the show.
Right. No, this is good because number four is going to be fun for you. That's fine by me. So number five in the best leader best lead actor in a drama, number five was Michael Kenneth Williams as Leonard Pine in Happen Leonard. Very surprised, but happily to see that he made the list. People will know him as the actor who played Omar on The Wire or Chalky on Boardwalk Empire, but probably more for Omar. He was equally good on Happen Leonard, playing a very different kind of character. He's another one of those actors who is always mesmerizing to watch on screen. He always brings the goods. He's just very different than most other people we get to see on television or films, quite frankly. So very happy he made the list.
Well, yeah, he's amazing in everything we ever see him. And he ranked pretty highly on my list, I believe. I guess I'm not positive. But, yeah, it was a good show. You know, we haven't heard a lot of chatter about it, sadly. But there is some really strong acting in that show. And, yeah, he was just, you know, dynamite. He always is. He's, you know, one of these guys is just completely automatic. Just, you know, yeah, kick ass.
Dying to see the second season of that show, too, to see where they go with that show. It's interesting.
All right.
Go on.
All right. Okay, now it's time for... We actually have another tie here, and, you know, since I'm such a gorgeous masculine stud here, it's going to be a three-way. So, yes. Story of my life, you know. So, we have... I'm going to start crossing these swords here. We got James Spader as Red Reddington in The Blacklist, Grant Gustin as Barry Allen in The Flash, and Aidan Young as Daniel Holden in Rectify. There's some.
Wow. Could you get three more different performances? And a three-way? I mean, it's bad enough I had the Happy Valley Supergirl tie. This one was kind of insane.
Yeah. So.
Well, you actually watched two of the three.
And I watched half the season of Blacklist before I just couldn't handle all the episodes.
So obviously you're familiar with what's
oh, yeah.
That show. I mean, he's the reason you watch. If you anyone who's watching the Blacklist still, the reason they're watching is James Spader. Let's face it. That's why I'm watching it, and he's so much fun to watch on it. But from, I mean, Grant Gustin, we have really enjoyed the work he's done more often than not on The Flash. And Aidan Young. My only regret is I almost wish Aidan Young could finish higher. And then you kind of take a look at the other actors, like, oh, yeah, that's a really tough category. Huh. So he talk about understatement. that's a beautifully understated performance year after year he does on Rectify.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All these actors are just, you know, they're awesome. So you've said it all. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, number three, we had Cillian Murphy as Thomas Shelby on Peaky Blinders. You have not gotten around to seeing Peaky Blinders as of yet, correct?
Nope, sir. I've just been too damn busy watching, you know, hundreds of episodes of 90s TV series as I've seen before. So, no time. Ah.
I know. It's frustrating. Like, I'm busy watching season 7 of The X-Files. Shut the fuck up.
No, I'm only on season 5. Get it right. Come on.
God damn it. Drives me crazy. Well-deserved. Peaky Blinders is a fantastic show. I didn't love the third season as much as the first two, but still liked it very much. And his performance is still very strong on it. So he definitely deserved to make this list. Was glad to see that a number of people voted him to the spot he arrived at here.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but he's one of those kind of actors that you just, you know, he can play a really kind of interesting, you know, sometimes kind of a weirdish role, and I've liked him really well in everything I've seen him in. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, it's a hook that would draw me in a little bit more, you know, for that kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, we have our number two, and that would be Mads Mikkelsen playing Hannibal on Hannibal.
There you go.
I don't think I had the Hannibal actors ranked super high just because, you know, I don't know, I had such a hard time getting over the shitty first half of the season. You know, it ended strongly enough, but, and they both had, both him and Dancy, they had, you know, nice, solid, strong performances, but I just, you know, just, that Italy shit kind of, you know, it fucked me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I still like a good portion of the Italy stuff. I'm not going to throw it all out. There's just certain parts of it I could have done without, the stuff that was just dragged out and the snails. But what was funny was I remember last year when we were doing the Snubbies and there was some confusion because originally when I had put together the list, a lot of stuff from that season of Hannibal was there. But then I realized, oh, that show didn't qualify for the Emmys because of when they finally aired it. It was after the eligibility. So I had to remove it from all the lists that we did for the Snubbies last year. And several people had actually voted for it in different categories. So I had to tell people to redo all their votes. So I had to then remember that this year. I was like, oh, it's been so long. It's been over a year since we've seen Hannibal, but it counts. So I think I might have voted for him at somewhere on my list. I don't remember where he ranked, but if there's one performance that's more memorable than any other on Hannibal, it was his as Hannibal Lecter. He was just, yeah. The fact that he could, again, as we said on our podcast time and time again, the fact that he could take a role which was already known as an iconic performance by a major movie star and make it his own in this television version really is impressive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's just awesome. Just, you know, another one of those actors who are just like, you know, you see him, he's going to be in a movie or something like that, and you're just like, huh, I should consider watching that movie, because you just know he's just going to bring it, whatever they give him.
I'm excited he's going to be in that new Star Wars movie coming out.
Yeah, and Doctor Strange, so.
And Doctor Strange, right. Yeah. Although I got a bad feeling about that. Anyway. Yeah,
well, it won't be because of him, I'm sure.
No, although that weird eye makeup he's wearing.
Anyway. Yeah, even though not to get on too long of a tangent. Fuck it, we don't need a tangent. Move on.
Okay. we're doing fine time-wise. Don't worry about it. Yeah. The last Snubbies was 2 hours. Don't worry.
Okay, the Marvel movies tend to take really, really awesome actors and just give them kind of, So, let's have Lee Pace not be able to have any kind of emotion at all. That's going to be fucking great. Yeah, I mean, just come on, douchebag. So, yeah, they could fuck it up. Let's hope they don't.
There you go. Okay, well said. And we are now up to the number one slot, which means the person who actually wins the category. So, and the snubby goes to... Justin Theroux as Kevin Garvey in season 2 of The Leftovers. Probably the biggest margin of win of any category. This was the no-brainer.
Yeah, it looks like it had more votes than anybody else, anything else. So, I believe. Yep.
I think basically, from looking at the going over the votes, anyone who actually watched The Leftovers, he was pretty much their number one choice. There might have been someone who had a number two, but he was in. Only the people who hadn't watched The Leftovers didn't vote for him. So that's why he amassed such a high total. And he absolutely deserved it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just, yeah, masterful performance.
I mean, wow. Just, there's so many things about that performance. And I mean, I liked him in season one. I might have had issues with the show overall, but I always liked him. But I thought he didn't just knock it out of the park. He knocked it out of 10 parks. You know, I can't come up with an analogy for him. I mean, there are certain episodes, especially towards the second half of the season of The Leftovers, where he's stunning, and it's heartbreaking, and it's powerful, and it's just it's the reason you watch television drama. Yep, it's the reason we do a podcast.
And definitely the reason we have our own awards show to, you know, help reward the losers that have got robbed. Because, I mean, you'll have to, when you go over the actual nominees of the category, I'm sure, you know, I'll be mildly vomiting some. But there'll be certain things where, you know, like Odenkirk was nominated, correct?
Yes.
Like, I would have been okay if, like, Theroux got his slot for, you know, the second season's The Bull Show. So, and I was all like, you know, I want Odenkirk to win for season one. So for me to be saying that, I mean, the Theroux performance is just amazing. Just, you know, it elevated a season that was really, really awesome and really well constructed to just like, you know, a very, very high best seasons of a TV list that's filled with many good seasons.
Well, the way I look at it, based on his infamous, what was clear to see for everyone watching him in his sweatpants in season one, and the fact that he goes home to Jennifer Aniston every night, maybe people feel he has enough going for him. He's won enough. Maybe that's the only rationalization I can give for him not being nominated for the Emmys.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's get that out of the way now. For that category, Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series with the Emmys, the nominees were Kyle Chandler for Bloodline, Kevin Spacey for House of Cards, Liev Schreiber for Ray Donovan, Matthew Rhys for The Americans, yay! Rami Malek for Mr. Robot, yay! And Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul. I'll say right now, I would have knocked Kevin Spacey out of the mix and put Justin Theroux in there. Spacey's okay. I don't think he does anything all that special in the last season of House of Cards. And I haven't watched Ray Donovan in a long time, but come on. Anyway, as far as who I think should actually win this category, Kyle Chandler is actually really good in season 2 of Bloodline, much more interesting than season 1. He's a character who's constantly on edge and is about to be exposed and fucked with. And Kyle Chandler is another one of those extremely likable actors, but he really tests you in season 2, where you want to just reach into the TV and slap him around. I'd like to say he's a strong contender. I'm not very convinced that a lot of the voters bother to watch Bloodline, so I'm kind of still thinking he's not going to win just for that reason. So I'm eliminating him. Unfortunately, the voters can be stupid, and they could decide this is the year they decide to give it to Kevin Spacey. I'm so frightened that might happen. And I really like Kevin Spacey, but he does not fucking deserve it. Do not give him the Emmy, people. Please do not give. He's won the Oscar. He doesn't need a couple Oscars. He doesn't need this. Liev Schreiber, I like him. Come on, really? Anyway, I love that Matthew Rhys got nominated. I I would be, I'm actively probably rooting for him because the fourth season, his performance really was something to behold. I have a hard time believing that the Americans is not just going to get nominated for the first time, they're actually going to win. It's hard for me to get over that.
Yeah.
Rami Malek, you know what? It would be really amazing to see that kid win. I would still be fairly surprised if that happened. It could. It's definitely, these last three are the people I think it's really between. Although I'm still frightened about Kevin Spacey. And Odenkirk. I could actually see Odenkirk actually pulling out a win here. But if I got to make a prediction, oh, God, I don't want to say Kevin Spacey, but I'm so frightened that's going to happen. You know what? I'm going to say they're going to go crazy here, and they're going to give it to Matthew Rhys.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's Odenkirk, just because just to see Bob Odenkirk give an acceptance speech would be awesome, and that would be great. But I just don't know if they're going to give it. I just don't know if they believe he deserves it. Matthew Rhys, I think, might get it. So I'm going to go with Matthew Rhys here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that'll be interesting. And definitely one category I'll be keeping an eye on. I mean, Rami Malek was pretty freaking awesome in that season of Mr. Robot. It'd be nice to see, you know, something just, you know, like the kind of stuff, the kind of shows that I grew up watching, you know, instead of the stuff that just mindless cattle watch. It'd be nice to see something like that, you know, crack through into, well, I don't know if I need to crack through into the mainstream, because the mainstream is filled with fucking fools, but but you know, it'd be nice. I mean, he's just, you know, just a cool guy doing just an awesome performance, and he's just, you know, I mean, I've listened to him on a few podcasts, and he's just, you know, he's cool. He's funny as shit. There's a part on the I don't know if you listened to the thing on the Nerdist where he mocks Christian Slater, like, in person for, like, acting like pretending he's Nicholson at some point, and just, like, you know, the podcast descends into laughter for, like, 30 straight seconds.
Oh, I wish I had heard that.
Yeah.
That's been my issue for, like, 30 years.
Yeah, he didn't say anything for, like, minutes, and then he just threw that in there, and it just was fucking funny as hell. So he's just, you know, you can just tell he's just a cool guy to be around. And just, you know, just what the toll it must take for him to, like, to play that character just like that. I mean, just, like, I don't know, I couldn't even imagine, like, trying to sleep after, like, acting like that. It just must be brutal. Ugh.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and just to sum up before we move on, I mean, I'm okay with four of the six here winning. If Chandler, Rhys, Malek, or Odenkirk, if any of those four win, I'm okay with it. I can rationalize. As much as I like Kevin Spacey as an actor in general, I don't think he deserves it. And there's no way anyone's going to convince me Liev Schreiber should win for Ray Donovan. I mean, I like the guy, but come on. I just, no. He's got a cute wife. That's good enough. No. I'm using that a lot tonight anyway. Anyway. Let's get to the final and rather major category, the biggest of them all, which would be the best drama series. You lead off this time. Oh, look, you get another tie.
I do. All right, and we have, yep, like you said, another tie. And our fifth slot for the best drama series is Happy Valley Season 2 and Rectify Season 3. Well, go ahead and take it away for Happy Valley, and then we can chit-chat about the show that I have watched.
Excellent. I am so thrilled that Happy Valley was able to make the top five here. I know that I already know it's largely based on the vote of a couple of voters who might have collaborated on a podcast earlier this year about it. That's the way it goes, man. It's such a good show. It's the show I recommend to people more than any other show. It's the easiest show to binge watch because it's only two seasons that are six episodes each. So people really have no excuse not to. It's not like trying to watch 173 episodes of Deep Space Nine. It's just there are few, if any, other shows I've ever seen that can balance crime drama and family drama as well as this show has. It's just that good a show.
I'll have to check it out. I'll have to listen to you and Susan's podcast about it, and then maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah, just again, because you weren't responsible for the mixing on that podcast. Be careful with the volume in the very beginning. It's kind of fucked up. But after that, it's fine.
Oh, yes.
She must hate that I keep mentioning it. I don't care.
I'm sorry, Susan. I'll make it up to you in a couple weeks. Huh?
Wow. Anyway, next. So, but the other show we both have seen. Rectify. I love Rectify. What say you, Dan?
Oh yeah, Rectify is great. That's one of those shows. How do we end up watching that? Did somebody like recommend it to you, and then we just after like we didn't really.
I did it on a whim.
Yeah.
I was watching something late at night on AMC, and although the show is on, I guess, the Sundance Channel, because they're sister channels, AMC had decided they were going to rerun the first season or so or two of Rectify in the middle of the night, and I just it was like the right place at the right time, and I had heard about it, and I just recorded the first episode and watched it the next day, and I was like, wow, that's different. And then I just watched, I taped it all in the week and watched the entire first season. Then I went and tracked down the second season. And I just started telling people about it. I was like, okay, it's a very different show. It doesn't move fast. But there's something just beautiful about it, which is just, it's so different than anything I've ever seen on television. And I still feel that way.
Oh, yeah. Rectify is amazing. Well, whenever it comes back, you know, we'll have to see if we can have time to give it a maybe do a regular podcast for it if our lives or lack thereof will allow.
I got a feeling it's going to be a problem for you because I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it's in October. It might be late October.
That might be
late October. But I know you're doing a lot of traveling in October, so it might be. But it might be as late as October 26th. I don't recall.
If it's like that, I can make it happen. I'll take a look. Keep talking.
Well, keep in mind, we don't need to necessarily do a podcast, you know, episode by episode on it. We can just do one or two covering a few or whatever.
Right.
But I don't think we have the time to do a week by week thing because of the superhero stuff, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's gonna,
Now the audience around us and at home are all waiting for you
It's your turn, fucker.
Oh, it's my turn. I fucked up. Okay, number four was the first season of Narcos. I love the first season of Narcos. It was great. I just finished season two of Narcos. Guess what? That was great, too. Great show. You can learn Spanish while you watch it, or you just read less as you watch all the subtitles. But it's such a strong show, such a well-done show. I think it made my top... whatever we did, top 10 of 2015 last year. I think it just made the list. I think I cheated and I made it a tie with another show or something. But really a good show, really well deserved to finish in the top five.
Yeah, I still haven't checked it out. That was one that our podcasting partner Jason was an early adopter of, and definitely was touting its virtues and continues to this day. But he was on top of that right away. And definitely, from what I've heard, I have only all of our friends that we respect, and some of them that I barely respect, all seem to be liking it, so.
So there you go.
Yeah. All right. Next. Now we can move to number three on our list, and that would be The Flash, Season 2.
I gotta say, a little surprised it finished this high. I think it might be just what people knew, and they picked it, but I mean, I like Season 2.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have said it was like the third best of all these shows. But I liked it. You know, I'm not unhappy, but I don't really think it deserved to rank this high.
Right. You know, it just depends on people's tastes and stuff too. I mean, not everybody's into like the dreary, dark stuff that is Rectify and presumably Happy Valley. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to want to embrace that.
Oh no, Happy Valley is happy. Shut up.
Oh, there you go. Maybe I'll watch it with my kids next week.
You should. It is kid friendly. Speaking of dark and dreary, number two, season one of Jessica Jones. Really strong season. Not surprised to see it ranked this high at all. As I've said early in the podcast, I'm telling you, if that had been a 10-episode season, it could have been perfect. But 13, it just dragged a little bit. Plus, there was like that one character and all the plots involving that character, which I thought were kind of stupid. But the main focus of that show, which is Jessica Jones and Kilgrave and the situation between them, was some of the most powerful stuff I think we've seen in television, period. And this is supposed to be a superhero show, a comic book show. And it really transcended that genre in a lot of ways. So really well deserved. Glad to see it finish this high.
Yeah, it definitely had the kind of thing where, like, you know, you've said it's not a perfect show, but it's a hell of a lot better than any of us were expecting. So,
it
definitely deserves some accolade. So, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, we have no idea what they're going to do next, but I'm pretty sure it'll be well worth our time. So, hopefully they'll tighten her up a little bit. And
yeah. Anyway, and plus we've got the Luke Cage show is about to premiere fairly soon.
Yeah, that,
I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping maybe she might make a cameo on it.
You know what? I haven't even started season two of Daredevil yet. I just realized it. I'm just like, oops.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I suck. But
fuck Daredevil. No, I'm sorry.
Fuck you, Daredevil bastard.
No, it's fine. But overrated as shit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, now for something, I'm sure ready to talk about some underrated nut shit.
We're up to number one.
The very, very best drama series and our snubbies here. And the winner is... Season 2 of The Leftovers. I have no negative things to say about the results of this vote whatsoever, because, you know, it's definitely... Oh, yeah, I can't think of a season of TV I watched that was as good as that last year. I mean, I can't think of a season of TV I watched that good since, I don't know, Breaking Bad ended, so... It was fucking good. Good. Most improved. Good.
Yes, absolutely. I went from being annoyed with people raving about season one, which I thought was just... ugh, pretentious and irritating as fuck, except for like three episodes maybe. I love season two. I'm telling people who watch season one and were iffy about it the way I was, please give season two a chance. It's worth it.
Oh, it's just so good.
It's just 10 episodes. I love everything about it. I love the fact that they got rid of that irritating, pretentious, over the top, stupid fucking opening credit sequence. And they went in this really totally different direction. Love that song. Love the credit situation. It tells the story of the show much better than anything else has. The performance. There's so much good about that season.
Yeah, they trimmed a lot of the stuff we didn't like about season one, and just yes. Like the way that they had the season laid out was just, I mean, it was just awesome. I mean, we're not always happy with the work that Damon Lindelof does sometimes. I mean, not just him, but we've seen a lot of people that have a hard time finishing what they start, even if they have really good concept. This is something where just like, you didn't know right away, but you watch that season, you're just like, they knew exactly what they were doing the whole time, and they executed it just perfectly, you know, in every way.
Yeah, the whole season, it feels more confident, more purpose, more laid out far better than I think season one was, and the culmination of where the plots end up leading is, for me, and maybe for many viewers, was far more satisfying than season one, where I thought, really, people didn't see that coming? That was their big plan? Really? That was the plan? Stupid plan. Here, okay, plan makes sense. I get why that was their plan. It works. I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to spoil Leftovers for people who haven't seen it. But it was a huge vote getter. Jessica Jones also did get a lot of votes as well, but there was still a considerable distance between the number one and number two slot. So again, if anyone who actually watched The Leftovers was voting, pretty much picked it as number one, I'm pretty sure. Except for two voters, and I was one of them. But
what was your number one?
Happy Valley was my number one.
Okay.
But I also recall that when we did our best of 2015, I think did you have Leftovers as number one? You might have. I think you might have. I don't remember. I feel like you did. I had as my number two. I had Fargo season two as my number one and Leftovers season two as number two.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I definitely remember, you know, I liked it more than I expected I did. Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing where, like, I wasn't sure, and then just it kind of grew on me a little bit.
Like a fungus. That,
like a festering boil, yes.
Yes, oh, got so many of those right now.
Yeah,
who doesn't? So, no, we don't. Anyway, and to finish the Emmy version of this, the lesser awards, the Outstanding Drama Series nominees for the Emmys are Homeland, The Americans, Game of Thrones, House of Cards, Mr. Robot, Better Call Saul, and Downton Abbey. 7 nominees, and they couldn't find a way to get the leftovers in there. Whatever. Okay, this is easy to trim this down. Homeland, it was okay, but no. I thought the season was fine, but no. It had its day, so forget that. House of Cards, come on. I mean, it was good, better than the previous season, but no, forget that. Downton Abbey, they could go sentimental because it was the final season, but...
And it was a lot better than the last couple, the two seasons before that.
It was. I don't... Thank you. You saved it all up for this. I don't see Downton Abbey getting that the kind of sentimentality that would lead to it winning this category the way other shows might. Like when it was Mad Men's last season or Breaking Bad's last season. I don't see that happening for Downton Abbey. I think it's kind of it back in or I guess it was, now that I'm thinking about it. And that's in the U.S. I haven't heard much talk about it. I would really be surprised. I think Maggie Smith winning would might be the award that they give it, but I would be really shocked to see it actually win here. I'm eliminating that too.
Yeah, it seems to, you know, it kind of gets rubber stamped every year, but it's not like the darling of people like it was the first few seasons. So, and it definitely, it was a good season, but it wasn't great. It wasn't, it doesn't deserve to win.
No. So we have 7. I pare it down to 4. So then you have The Americans, Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, and Better Call Saul. Here's the funny thing. Both of us did not feel Game of Thrones should have won last year, to put it mildly, right?
Yep.
However, this season was really a good season.
Oh, yeah.
If it won this year, I'd be like, okay, I could see that. Because there was a lot to like. Even the stuff that we didn't like didn't really take over the show so much. There was so much other good stuff. We could put that aside, i.e. the stuff with Arya. This was kind of like lame.
Yeah.
But you know what? So much was good about the season, or really good.
They fixed the big issues that I had. They were obviously listening to the podcast and our personal Facebook comments, and they took care of shit. So thanks, showrunners.
I could really see it winning again, but however, it being a genre show, usually when the Emmys does break out and give the show the Emmy once, they don't usually do it again. Like a Lost or even 24. I think won once and that was it. They just rarely do that. So I'm going to say it won't, although would I be surprised if it did? No, but I'm going to say it doesn't. So I remove that. So then we're left with Better Call Saul, Mr. Robot, and The Americans. I would love to see The Americans win, but I do feel that's more of a critical darling than it is. I mean, it's amazing that it actually showed up here, but I would be so shocked if that actually wins. Although there's so many great performances. I mean, Dylan Baker, Frank Langella, and everyone else. So good. Such a good show this season. Somehow Margot, what's her name, Martindale, keeps winning Best Guest Actress. She literally shows up for less than 5 minutes every season and wins an award. I'm not sure how that happens, but she does that.
Well, it's because she is good on Justified, and Emmy voters recognize her name.
Yeah, pretty much. She's just, I mean, she's solid.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it a win. You know what? I'd love, although I think both of us would love to see Better Call Saul win, I kind of have this weird feeling it could end up being Mr. Robot. It could just be like, that's like the fresh, new, golden child kind of a thing. It's a genre show. Its first season was pretty fucking exceptional.
Yeah.
And definitely different and memorable and pretty much course changed an entire cable network. I mean, no one gave USA much thought before. Now it's like, oh, they can do stuff like this. I mean, they've had good shows, but not like this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go out on a limb. It's a little bit of a risky pick here, but I'm going to say it's Mr. Robot is somehow going to win that category. I wouldn't be surprised if they go with like a Game of Thrones or something. But again, all those 4 I just mentioned, if any of those 4 win, I'm happy. But I'm gonna go. Yeah, Mr. Robot. What the fuck? Why not?
Sweet, nice.
And I guess with that Emmy prediction, which has nothing to do with the Snubbies, but we put them together to make this a jam-packed podcast for y'all. That closes the second annual
Snubbies.
Snubbies. Whatever. It's late. The whiskey's kicked in about 40 minutes ago. So I don't know if we have anything really slated to do podcast-wise. We might get together with our little geeky squad. We might. I don't think we've... Have we made a decision about that?
Yeah, we've just kind of, you know, spitballed a little bit. So we'll, you know, we've got a few ideas in the pipeline for some fun stuff that you, the listeners, should appreciate. Leave 5-star reviews. Click pause right now and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you. Or else, well, we hate you.
Yes, come on. I mean, we were getting so many of them, and now we've gotten so few this year. And we might not have a lot of listeners, but we certainly got way more listeners than we have, you know, ratings and reviews. So come on.
But I do understand. You know, it is a difficult thing to do. I mean, it does take about, I don't know, 15 to 20 seconds to, you know, pull it up on your iPhone or something. So.
Way to convince people, antagonize. Works for dating, job interviews, and 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Oh, I guess that's why I'm single. So,
as am I.
Wow, you do the sad, yeah,
sad clown, sad trombone,
and yeah. And
anyway, let's wrap up our little thing here before we go any further and get any deeper. As Dan has been saying, you can find us on iTunes for those 5-star reviews and ratings and whatever, reviews and ratings. But you can also, you know, better yet, subscribe to our feed there. That's an easy way to access our stuff. You can also find us on the Facebook, we're at a Serious TV Drama Podcast, in case you didn't know that and somehow you're listening and you don't know what our title is. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You know what? Just for the heck of it, I am going to say what the email address is.
Say it in the Mason Verger voice.
I can't just... No one will understand what it is if I do it that way.
We'll never check the email anyway. Who cares?
Oh, sure. STVD. I can't even do it anymore. My God. I have to prepare. I have to like do lip exercises to be prepared to do Mason Verger.
Or no lip exercise.
Or no. I have to cut them off. Anyway. I think actually I'm not even sure what our email address is. I think it's stvdpodcast@gmail.com.
I think that's it.
I think that's what it is. I should go check it out. It's got to be like filled with like weird spam and like, oh, babysitters.com. Wow.
CJ said if we have any penis enlargement emails in there, to forward them to him. So just let me know.
I will. As well as a vagina tightening website.
Yeah, you can use both.
And taint bleaching. Anyway. Well, it was lovely to get back together with you again for a podcast, Dan.
Yes, yeah, it's been a good time. So.
So hopefully we'll get this out before the Emmys. If that's not the case, hopefully those predictions will be true and you'll know it already. Who knows?
Yes, it's September 15th, 2016, at 11:10 p.m. or in Eastern Time, it's already the 16th. But the Emmys still haven't aired yet, so yeah.
A.M. It's 12. It's 12:10 a.m. here, actually. We passed the midnight hour just a few moments ago.
Oh, oops. Well, okay. You've had a lot of whiskey, so I can't keep these times straight. So.
Anyway, the rambling is making this longer than it needs to be, so let's wrap it up here. It was great podcasting with you once again. Looking forward to our next time together. So, and again, thanks to all the folks who helped vote to make this show possible.
Oh, yeah.
We've already mentioned your podcast, so you're not going to get pimped again because, again, you're a pimp for us. So that's about it. So good night to all our listeners, and good night to you, Dan.
Good night, Scott.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket to my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts escaping, home, where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories. And every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts escaping, home, where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Tonight I'll sing my songs again, I'll play the game and pretend. All my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness in harmony. I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts escaping, home, where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Silently for me.